Welcome to Power Play. On a day which sees the Prime Minister returning empty-handed from his China free trade mission, we have the latest on why and the business community's reaction in minutes. Also ahead, he's talked himself back into the headlines. Disabilities Minister Kent Hare faces another complaint of offending people looking to him for help. We'll talk to the latest person affected by his comments and ask the press gallery if the Trudeau cabinet needs a haircut. And they want the murdered and missing Indigenous Women Inquiry Commissioner gone. And these are the people the inquiry is supposed to help. We'll ask the National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations why his assembly is demanding the top commissioner's resignation. And a 40-year analysis of veteran suicides produced some sobering statistics. The MPs are briefed and ready to discuss this and more in about 20 minutes or so. But first, another misstep for Cabinet Minister Kent Hare, who's already facing an outcry for insensitivity to others. Jennifer McRae approached her local Liberal MP, Kent Hare, last year to discuss a class action lawsuit by sick mothers seeking extended maternity leave benefits to cope with cancer or other ailments. She joins us from Calgary. Jennifer McRae, as I understand it, the Liberals promised to stop fighting your case in the courts, yet they continue to do so, and that's why you called Kent Hare. Am I right about that?
That is correct.
So how hard was it to get a hold of Mr. Hare to call you back, and what did he say when he did?
I sent an email request on his website requesting a meeting, which I followed up with a phone call to his office. I in-depthly put who I was, the class action that I represented, and that I was seeking a bit of his time to advocate to inquire as to why a year after the campaign promise was made, the Trudeau government had still not settled the class action lawsuit. I followed up about two or three times the following week, and I received a less than two-minute phone call back from Mr. Hare.
All right. So how did that conversation go?
It was very short. It was very... It was a very rough phone call, I would say. He let me know who he was. He said, I understand that you're a Calgary woman that's involved in a lawsuit regarding women's equality. And I said, no, I'm involved in a class action lawsuit regarding parental leave and sickness benefits. And he said, well, it's a matter that's before the courts and, it will be duly noted by the minister.
All right. So what did he say that offended you?
Basically in the conversation after I realized he was not going to meet with me or very much listen to the help that I was seeking, I asked another question. I said, why does the Liberal government continue to fight sick women? And he said, well, Ms. McRae, that is like the old question. It's like saying, sir, when did you stop beating your wife?
Like, what was your reaction to that? I mean, this is a cabinet minister you were talking to in the federal government. How did you react?
I didn't say anything. I didn't really react because I was just so taken aback by, that he was using this loaded question, and actually just the wording that he used, it quite floored me. I didn't respond to what he said. He said, Ms. McRae, are my comments fair and my handling of this situation? And I said, they are your comments. I'm not going to say that they're fair. And that was the end of the conversation. So it was...
After that, I'm assuming this obviously impacted on you because we're talking about this more than a year later. I mean, did you demand a retraction? Did you contact the PMO and say, hey, listen, you got a minister that's not showing much sensitivity to my problem?
No, we just kind of kept it at arm's length. It was a thing of that was after, again, dealing a year after the campaign broke, the campaign promise had not been fulfilled. Mm-hmm. I had reached out to the PM. I've reached out to several ministers. This was after a minister in Ontario said, maybe you should contact a local Liberal MP. So I decided to contact Mr. Hare. It was just a general added on sense of frustration that piles on to this class action lawsuit.
I'm assuming, Jennifer, that the reason you released this week or talked to the media about this week is because of the thalidomide victims' comments that he said earlier this week?
Yes, precisely. Exactly. I came out to you know, because I know exactly how they felt. I know exactly how they were spoken to and the wording that was used. Again, this is a group that is seeking someone who has been elected to listen to them and advocate for them. And I really feel that their voices were not heard, the same that my voice was not heard with the minister as well.
I want to play a clip for you that you can listen to what he said in the House of Commons this afternoon. Here's how it went.
Our government is committed to improving the lives of all Canadians. I recognize that when speaking to people, I tend to be straightforward. However, I regret my comments as I know they were brash and inappropriate, and I apologize. I remember the conversation with Ms. McCrae. It was a difficult conversation, and that is no excuse. I will take this opportunity to better myself as both an individual and as a parliamentarian.
So, is that a satisfactory answer to you, Jennifer, that he's going to somehow better himself?
You know, I don't really... That's not the matter that's at the hand in my heart. It's more about the fact that the bigger question remains is what else is this Liberal government going to do to fulfill their campaign promise of 26 months ago to settle the class action lawsuit? You know, Kent Hare was hired and elected to listen and advocate for his constituents, not to be about his personal growth. Right. So it needs to be, you know, going up more. What are they going to do about it's not just the words that they're saying, it's the lack of action as well.
Good point. All right. Jennifer McCrae, well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. We'd like to hear your views on this or any other topic on today's show. Reach out to us through social media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also contact us via email. Our address is powerplay@ctvnews.ca. Well, in other news, the Prime Minister is on his way back to the relatively friendly realm of Canada after a chilly week of modest trade gains in China. CTV's Glenn McGregor was on the tour. He sent us this report before the plane departed.
Don, the Prime Minister has spent the last 5 days meeting with the Chinese leadership and the business community trying to open up new markets for Canadian products. But he leaves today without having produced many concrete results. There was some progress on getting better access to that booming Chinese market for commodities like canola, seed, and beef products. But negotiators were unable to secure a framework for those Canada-China free trade talks, as was expected when the delegation arrived here earlier this week. That despite efforts by his trade minister to keep talks with his counterparts going in Beijing right up to the very last moment. Trudeau, though, didn't sound particularly disappointed.
But there was never any illusions that this would be quick or easy. This is something that Canadians expect this country and our government to get right. And that's exactly what we are going to remain focused on doing.
The Prime Minister also said he was able to bring up consular cases of Canadians detained in China. And he said he specifically raised the case of that BC couple currently jailed over smuggling allegations related to their winery. But again, no immediate results there. On another foreign affairs matter, Trudeau was asked today about President Donald Trump's plan to move the U.S. Embassy in Israel to Jerusalem. He didn't directly criticize that decision, but made it clear that the Canadian embassy, at least, is staying put in Tel Aviv. His focus now shifts back to domestic politics. On his way back from China, he'll be stopping in Saskatoon so he can campaign with the Liberal candidate in an upcoming by-election to fill the seat left vacant by former Conservative Agriculture Minister Jerry Ritz. Don.
All right. Thanks, Glenn. Good job over there. All right. There are whispers that the business entourage on the Prime Minister's tour expected a breakthrough on free trade with China. Let's take the pulse of the boardroom with John Manley. He's a former foreign affairs minister and current president of the Business Council of Canada. I mean, John, you've done a lot of these trips in political incarnations and as a businessman. Have you ever seen a case of greater expectations being under-delivered?
I'd have to think about that for a minute to try to come up with one, but the surprising thing is that the expectations were created. Generally, you cook these things in advance so that you know what the outcome is going to be. And this one, either that wasn't prepared well in advance or it went off the rails, or expectations that were unreasonable were being created.
I know John McCallum was up here the week before the Prime Minister took off, and I wonder, this is sort of his first big test as the ambassador to China. Does it fall to him?
You know, it's hard to pick who would be responsible for this. It definitely looks like an oops, not just because they didn't go ahead and announce that free trade talks were about to start, but also if you looked at the body language that Premier Li showed in his joint availability with Mr. Trudeau, that looked pretty frigid. So that's not good.
Right. Do you think this whole progressive values thing that Justin Trudeau talks about is just too bold to try and incorporate into a deal with China? I mean, they're not ready for this sort of stuff, like labor standards, environmental laws, gender issues.
Well, I think we have to recognize that this is a country that's very different from Canada. I think before he became Prime Minister, Mr. Trudeau said he admired China, and I assume that's because they are the poster child for raising people out of poverty. I mean, the number of people that have gone from a dollar a day in that country in our lifetime is astounding. It's the greatest number in the history of the world. So they've done something, but they are still dealing with a big rural to urban migration. They are an authoritarian state. They have state capitalism as an economic system. They're different from us. That hasn't prevented us from making them our second largest trading partner. So we want to advance that commercial interest as well. It's good for us. It's good for them. How much are they willing to listen to us telling them how they should run their society? Maybe we now know.
We kind of forget. We're kind of a little power. They're the next global super. They are a superpower now. It could be number one in 10 years.
They're a superpower. They're also 1.5 billion people. Canada's population size of a medium-sized city in China.
That's true.
And, it's very hard for Canadians, I think, generally, to appreciate the scale of things that are being done in that country. They don't really think that we have a lot of things to tell them.
Are you hearing some concern that, the Trans-Pacific Partnership didn't move ahead? This deal looks like it's floundering a bit. You got the U.S. free trade deal. NAFTA looks like it's palliative, or maybe. And then even the European free trade deal, which is supposed to be sort of the signature one, you're losing a big chunk of that with Britain and Brexit. Are you worried what's going on as a broader worldwide scheme of things?
Well, I would have thought that with what's happening in NAFTA, which is out of our control, let's face that, right, that the rest of the trade narrative should write itself. In other words, what do we need to do if we don't have NAFTA? We need diversification more than ever. So, and this government, the Trudeau government, actually secured the European agreement. It was floundering, and they with great effort achieved it. I would have thought you would seize TPP, you would seize trade with the ASEAN countries, with China, as being what you need to do, and Latin America probably as well. We need to think about what our relationship with Mexico will be in the absence of NAFTA, and we ought to be the champions of liberalized trade in the world. Not that every agreement is going to give everybody whatever they want. It has to serve Canada's interests, but that should be the force that we're leading with, that we're for free trade and we'll sign on.
And it doesn't really look that way.
Well, it's hard to say exactly where this goes. And I think it's everybody's a little bit troubled by it, especially with the uncertainty south of the border.
I got to ask you, if the uncertainty of the south of the border becomes more clear that NAFTA's doomed by the decision today by the U.S. International Trade Commission that said Canada's softwood lumber, you are a detriment to our industry. Those duties are going to stay on. We're going to keep them, actually. Is that a signal where this is going in on the bigger deal, which is NAFTA?
No, it's just typical U.S. protectionism that we've seen repeat itself in softwood lumber a number of times over the years. But it is a reminder of why we need, in trade agreements with the United States, dispute resolution, which was the point at which Simon Reisman, who was negotiating the first Canada-U.S. agreement for Brian Mulroney, walked out of the negotiations, and Mulroney and President Reagan had to put that back together, because if we